I hope you're ready. It's that time. Climb aboard, all aboard, for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I can't take it anymore.
I am losing my mind.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
I know that, dude.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
Alex is sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about?
I would have Mariota out at 3 in the morning drunk, pawning his Heisman Trophy to get into an illegal poker house.
And now, a guy with lots of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
No, I mean, like, lots of issues.
Shut up and get on with the program. Dude is a snot.
And broadcasting them, searching for answer.
Who is this?
It's Steve Tannen.
Have another donut, you fat pig. Welcome, 5 o'clock hour on a Tuesday, getting the lead out, rocking on into Sports Talk in the 5 o'clock hour. All right. With that said, thank you very much for tuning in. Thanks for being here. Thanks for your support. Thanks for allowing us to continue to do this into, this is Barbara Walters and this is 2020. Are we officially done with the Super Bowl? At what point, depending on where you work, what time it is, who played, could you lay it to rest? I mean, I guess if we were doing this on a radio show in Kansas City, probably not so much over it. Probably having interviews, people still coming out of a haze like, woohoo! Just, I'll tell you what. How many calls can we take where people just go, go Chiefs, go KC, woo, woo, woo. And that doesn't really apply here in Eugene. It just simply doesn't. You know, the time the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, so that was 2013, February 2014, I wasn't even here because that's when my uncle had become ill and I had to go back east. And that's the one game where I saw maybe five or six plays on a TV in a hospital. Otherwise, I've seen every play of every single solitary Super Bowl. And that's a lot. That's 53 full games. I don't really remember the first one. The second one was legendary because even though I was only about, I was only seven, I used to do the proverbial sit in front of the TV on elbows, kind of cupping your chin in your hand, kind of a little kid. And every time I'd get up, my cousin would yell, hey, balloon head, sit down in front. And I was known, early part of my life, I was known as balloon head. And for two cousins of mine, I still get that occasionally. But it's weird. I vaguely remember the Jets winning as well. I remember Matt Snell scoring into the bluish end zone, and it was the first time the AFL had ever gone in front, but, you know, it was also the third game. And from then on, I have pretty vivid memories. Although the year Washington beat Denver 42-10 with Doug Williams in January of 88, that was one of those days where we started the Bloody Marys early, and that game's a little fuzzy, but 20-something Steve, that's a story for another entire program. Your thoughts, always welcome. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. We were talking yesterday, does anybody, I mean, first, it's very rare, but to see a team win a championship 50 years apart. And it's not a matter of, you know, you could have seen the 1950 Yankees win the World Series and then see them win it again in 2000 because they won a million of them in between. But to see the Chiefs win it in January of 70 and again in January of 2020, I remember when I was walking cold, freezing my baba off, it was like, well, that's kind of unique. Just in the historical timeline of things. And we'll get into it after we finish up with Coach. I wanted to talk about droughts. And so I was talking about during the decade of the 2010s, we saw 15 teams either end a really long drought, like four decades or more, or just win it for the first time ever, which would be, you know, like most recently the case of the Toronto Raptors. Although I was trying to think, during that decade, did we see a college football? It never dawned on me to check college football or basketball as well. I'm usually a lot better than that. I mean,
Clemson, right?
I think they won a share of it in 80.
So, yeah, but they wouldn't win until 2016, so that's pushing 30 years. That's significant.
It's 36 years, by the way.
Well, okay, I'm not great at math. I got close.
That was... No! 10 off 26 or 36 is not close. I don't care what kind of...
I said 30. I was only off by 6.
Well, the fact that you had a 0 and a 6 and came up with a 0 is a little bit unnerving, to tell you the honest-to-God truth.
I'm not a math guy. Jeez, come on.
I'll tell you one thing, though. In college basketball, you do not get Cinderella. She just ain't invited. I mean, it's Duke. You know, you...
Didn't Virginia win their first, or their first in forever as well?
No, that was their first in forever. Very well.
Thank you. That's two for me.
Nova, Carolina, Duke, Louisville, UConn, Duke. Yeah, in the 2010s, it was roll up another one just like the other one, because they've been WS, very similar. So, I guess college football during the decade, well, didn't Alabama win them all? So, what's really the difference there? Ohio State won one in 2014. In 2010, I don't know when Auburn had won either a share or the national title. They would have been the one who kind of started it. They didn't win one under Bo. I think with Auburn, you got to go back to like the 1950s. I don't know if they, actually Auburn might have started the whole kit and caboodle out with a response to our query. All right, let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Talk some more Oregon hoops. Head coach and crew back in town after barnstorming the East Coast, culminating in last night's historic win at Storrs. Now a few days off until this big home set with the Arizona schools. You can follow him on Twitter. Use the handle at GoDucksKG. Kelly Graves joins us. Coach, a good Tuesday to you. Welcome back to town. How are we feeling?
I'm still a little groggy. It was a tough trip, you know, Thursday game in Salt Lake, Saturday in Boulder, and then, of course, the game last night. We flew home after the game, had to drive to Hartford, and then flew home from Hartford last night around 11 o'clock, and we got in this morning a little after 5 a.m., so we had to have it's a smaller plane. It was a charter plane, so we had to stop once in Michigan up in the Upper Peninsula, and then... And then again in Montana. So it was a long trip home, but we made it, thank goodness. And now we got to catch up and start again on Friday.
Oh, yeah, man. You know, I was speaking with Michelle Vopel of ESPN earlier, and we kind of ran through your game. She was here from Team USA. Then, of course, you had the Stanford game on ESPN last night. You know, you're at the epicenter of women's basketball, nationally televised game. What is it about your team that, man, when the spotlight is brightest, you guys sure rise up?
Well, it sure seems like that this year. Yeah, our three national TV games on ESPN, including the Oregon State game on the road. Yeah, we've won all of them and looked really good in doing so. This could have been a tough trip for a lot of teams, but we have an experienced veteran group. You know, they've been through the wars. We've won, on tough courts all over the country, and we're pretty good. So. The moment yesterday just wasn't too much for us. We got off to a good start and just really maintained a high level of execution and play. The the whole game. They never really could get back into it, which, you know, is a real testament to really a well played ball game by us. And I'll tell you what could be a daunting environment. I mean, sold out. The students, you know, really supported. They're right on you. You look around at all the banners, not just the 11 women's national championship banners, but how about the four men's banners since 1999? And then all the Hall of Honor and the names that you see in there. It's like, oh my goodness, there's been some big time players play at that arena.
No, you can get overwhelmed. You didn't. You know, one thing I noticed over the weekend at the Mountain Schools on the stat sheet, we saw Giomi, Morgan Yeager, Cochran back in there spelling some of your rotation players. I mean, Coach, at this time of year, with what a grind this season is, how huge is it to just be healing up, not only for games, but to have the full complement of kids out there to practice to get you ready?
Well, no question. It's big, and you mentioned the first two games. You know, we knew Connecticut. You're going to tighten the rotation, right? You know, that's just going to happen by the nature of the game and the opponent. And so, any minute that we could get as rest for Ruthie and Sabrina and Satu, you know, in the mountains, you know, was going to be a benefit. And like Sabrina gets a triple double at Colorado in less than three quarters. So I was able to pull her out before the end of the third quarter. And so that's really meaningful rest so that she was able to go, you know, 38 minutes or whatever she played yesterday. And our bench comes in and contributes. It's not just, you know, they don't just kind of keep us even. We actually gain ground. And that's really, really valuable, and it showed up yesterday. I thought Taylor Chavez in that fourth quarter, you know, Aaron Boley got us started early, made some big baskets, but in the fourth quarter we decided to go with a little bit more defense, and so Taylor played that entire fourth quarter. And even though she didn't score, she had a huge impact on the outcome.
Oh, no question about it. Talking hoops with Coach Graves. Sometimes in sports, cliches work because they cut to the truth, whether it's a comparison to Warriors. Man, from the opening tip last night, it seemed like Ruthie Hebert understood with UConn's length and size, she was going to have to be a force. And, I mean, I know we could you can gush about her, but, I mean, I don't know if there was any way around maybe her being the best player on the floor last night.
I don't think you're wrong at all. I think she was the best player on the floor. She controlled the defensive boards, crashed the offensive boards well, and then just her ability to finish around the rim and just be a presence. They had a hard time guarding her. They used a couple of different combinations, and you know, she was on a mission. You could tell. You know, she's been playing well. I thought the Oregon State weekend, she was just looked different. Like she's got a new level of strength and quickness and athleticism, which to me means, you know, her body feels real good right now. But she was a real dominant force, and it was good to see her play like that in a big game against a really good center. So if we continue to have the what we call the hammer in there for us playing like that, we're going to be mighty tough to beat.
You know, I feel like each week you and I kind of track the progress of your defense, which seems to just be getting better and better. You mentioned it, but last night, 8 steals, 5 blocks, cutting off driving lanes. I mean, 17-4 edge and points off turnovers. I mean, that defense, how just critical was it? Because it kind of denied UConn any real run to get back in the game.
Yeah, anytime they, you know, put together a basket or two, maybe two in a row, we seem to answer it either with a good shot of our own or a key steal in a key moment or a block. Yeah, it's been what's really driving us. I think it's helped our offense, too. Our points off turnovers and our points in transition, which come a lot from our defense, have been higher in the last 3 weeks than they've been, you know, in years here. So, and then the job Mignon did last night, she's just disrupting. She gets into your face. She can get out and deny. If you're loose with the ball at all, she's going to be on it. And I think the rest of the team has taken notice. We really don't have a weak link defensively like we've had in the past, you know, where we've had to kind of hide players defensively. You know, Satu's one of those that has become a really elite defender. We're putting her on night in and night out on the best guard, if it's not a point guard. And she's been doing great. She was on Megan Walker for most of the game yesterday, and Megan, their leading scorer, I think, ended up with 6 or 8 points. You know, it's just Satu's length. She's really learned, I think, the nuances of being able to defend player to player. And it's really helped.
Yeah, Megan Walker doesn't have a whole bunch of 3 of 16 shooting nights.
No, and they were usually contested. She had a couple open ones, but usually contested. And when you're 6'4 with the arm length that she's got, that can be tough. Unsettling a little bit.
You know, I feel like between you, your staff, and this team, there's kind of a fail-safe in place. I mean, that's an emotional win, an emotional trip, but your team kind of has that eye of the tiger, and the fact that you're coming home now for the Arizona schools, would I be accurate in saying you'll address it, but I don't think you have to worry much about any kind of letdown with this group?
I don't think so. I think that would have shown up if we were kind of immature in that way. That would have shown up in the mountain schools. We came out and put 31 points up in each of the two first quarters, which to me means, okay, our team's locked in. We were already up 15 and 20 in the first quarter. So it wasn't like they were looking ahead to UConn. Well, now we have the other thing. Now we've got the come down from that. We have to, again, refocus, because we were talking the whole week about, hey, the UConn game's the icing on the cake. What's really important to us is a Pac-12 championship. We can't slip up in the mountains. And now we got to come home and hold serve here at home and beat two really good Arizona teams. But if we continue to defend like we are and play with this high energy, they seem like they're really on a mission right now and really dialed in and focused. And I just hope that we can continue that, because we're going to need every bit of that kind of effort on Friday night.
Yeah, a couple final thoughts for Coach Graves. I mean, since you beat Arizona, at the time they'd lost 3 in a row, and since then they swept the Washington schools on the road, they beat ASU, they ran the Southern Cal teams out of their gym. So safe to say, you're playing a team that's hitting their stride and are still right there for the conference title.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we know it. Yeah, we know it. I haven't really turned all my attention to them yet. We had today off. Tomorrow we'll practice in earnest, talking Wildcats. But they're a good team, and they have one of the premier players, actually a candidate for player of the year in the conference, in Ari McDonald. I mean, she is just lightning quick and can score in bunches. And she's not a one-person show. They defend real well. They get out and get after you. And, you know, we're going to need everybody at Matthew Knight this weekend to get crazy. I mean, to think about this, we have 4 more home games with Sabrina and Ruthie, and that class. If you haven't seen them, you better get your butt out there and see them. Because when your kids say, hey, you know, did you get to see Sabrina play? And you said, no, I never did. Well, you're going to kick yourself. And it's not just about Sabrina. You know what I'm talking about. It's this whole team. They're fun to watch, and we need the place, you know, rocking.
Yeah, like what I said, not only for supposedly grown-ups to get out there, but if you've got a kid who's 7, 8, 9 and has an interest, they're going to look back and say, hey, why don't you take me to see that team?
Well, exactly, right? No, it's fun. I'll tell you, we're down to 8 games in conference play here, 4 weekends. We've got 4 at home, 4 on the road, and they're all important, and they're all going to be challenges. So this is the time of year, man, when the proof is in the pudding.
Folks, he's Kelly Graves, the head coach, number 3, maybe with a bullet via tiebreaker. They are the conference leaders. You got 2 huge games with the Arizona schools coming, 6 o'clock Friday, 2 o'clock Sunday, on Twitter at GoDucksKG. Coach, congratulations. That was a remarkable road trip culminating with last night. best of luck this coming weekend, and we'll see where it all stands when we talk again early next week.
Sounds good, Steve. Thanks for having me, buddy.
All right, take it easy. Yeah, going to the mountains and doing the quick and painless thing. Like he said, 31 points in the first quarter, twice. Able to get some rest for the frontliners, able to get some work for you know, those who are returning from injury, Lydia Giomi, Morgan Yeager, and Lucy Cochran, the other freshman, as well as getting Holly and Jazz and Taylor some extra time in there, and resting up Sabully and Hebert and Ionescu. You know, when you refer to this team as a Big Three, I understand that, but it's always like a Big Three and somebody's going to do something, whether it's the performance of Mignon Moore last night or Bowley when she's dropping bombs from downtown. It's pick your poison. When this team is clicking and playing defense like that, yeah, good luck with all that. All right, 284-8571. That's your Oregon fuel injection hotline if you'd like to participate in the program. You could also hit us up on the text line, 321-0824. You can try us on Twitter at 953thescore, or for the station at SportsTalk953. Before we take a break, I guess we're going to shoehorn in one more phone call. Let's bring in Mike. Mike, good afternoon. How's it going?
You know, I'm doing great. How about you?
Awesome. What's up?
So the gentleman, and I use that term in its broadest sense, who called in, I think it was last week, and said that Coach ought to bench Mignon Moore, I don't think he was right.
Yeah, and you're not the first person who's brought that up.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Believe me, between our text line during the game last night saying, do we get a redo on that call about Moore? Because she was fantastic last night.
I don't know. I would love to know. They didn't all turn into steals. How many tipped passes she got? You know, I mean, she had her hands on every ball.
Yeah, she is, like Coach Graves just said, she's very disruptive with her speed, yep, her quickness, and her athleticism.
Okay, that's all I wanted.
All right, thanks a lot. All right, before we break, 95.3 The Score gives you the world's largest indoor garage sale. You can join us here at KUJZ, March 28th, 9 a.m., 4 p.m. If you need to get your spring cleaning done or just do a little clear out, it's going to take place at the Lane County Fairgrounds. You can reserve your spot now. Booth space starts at $65. Gets you a 10 by 10 spot. You need to contact the KUJZ front desk to reserve your space now. Admission is only $2. Don't miss the world's largest indoor garage sale, March 28th at the Lane County Fairgrounds in Eugene, from KUJZ 95.3 The Score. All right, break time. Back. Update time, more sports talk, 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Like I said, like, Tom Brady wants to play with weapons. He wants to play on a team that can win the Super Bowl. He wants to play a team that's a great offensive mind, has a great defense. The Niners have that to a greater extent than the Patriots do. And take it to another trolling level even further. Patriots will need a quarterback. What about the guy they drafted a couple years ago by the name of Jimmy Garoppolo? Wouldn't it make sense to swap these two guys?
Is that the most insane post-Super Bowl NFL commentary we've heard yet? That's Bill Barnwell on ESPN Radio basically suggesting the Niners and Patriots should swap quarterbacks because San Francisco feels like they're a just-add-water, although, what did Garoppolo do wrong? He got him to the Super Bowl with the lead into the fourth quarter. His first year as a starter.
He missed
an open receiver.
He missed Emmanuel Sanders, he was open. He was trying to throw him open, and he threw it like 5 yards downfield longer than he had to. It was still a 70-yard pass through the air, and he was off by 5 yards. He wasn't out on the field when the 49ers gave up a 44-yarder on 3rd and 15, and he didn't, I don't know, we wasn't playing defense. Like, come on. He did nothing wrong.
That's insane. You know how you always ask me percentage-wise? So Labor Day, Tom Brady as the starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. By the way, his hometown team. And Jimmy Garoppolo returning to the New England Patriots. What percentage, I'm going to give you some crunch exchange, would you give that? Less than 1%?
Yeah, are there numbers lower than zero that
could we go
statistically
negative?
Qualify?
That would be...
Because I've heard a lot of wild takes like, oh, this is the first of many to come for Mahomes, and then everybody's like, whoa, 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 pump the brakes. Aaron Rodgers won an MVP and then a Super Bowl in his third season, and he hasn't even gotten back to that game yet. Let's slow down. But this sounded like a genuinely serious... No, I think the Niners and the Patriots could maybe do some sort of sign-in trade with Garoppolo and Brady, and it'll all work out. Although Brady's been in Boston for so long, it wouldn't feel right coming back to the Bay Area and being like the hometown guy.
Anywhere else.
He's what Boston has.
And let's not forget, Rodgers was in the 05 draft and really didn't become the quarterback, so it was his third year as the starter. And, you know, they had lost in the wild card game, won the Super Bowl, and he's been back to the conference championship game twice. But with Mahomes, it was like a crescendo. He almost knocked off the Patriots in the AFC title game, then got over the hump by beating Tennessee, and then won the Super Bowl. You know, it's kind of interesting. I kind of forgot about that. Green Bay went 10-6 in 2010. They were a wild card team. They had to beat the Eagles, Atlanta, then Barce. They remember they got in when what's his face got hurt in that game, and they had to bring in what was his name, Haney. Yeah. It all comes back to me now. It was Jay Cutler got hurt and Caleb Haney had to come in. And obviously they didn't win. But then they knocked off the Steelers in the Super Bowl. Then the next year was the shocker, because they went 15-1 and were supposed to, you know, a lot of people were talking about back-to-back. They lost late. It really didn't matter. And then the Giants went in and beat them at a Lambeau Field. And they didn't beat them. They kind of kicked their ass. They beat them by 17. So they blew it. The thing with Mahomes is, first, I understand that they're already a favorite, which they should be. They just won it. They're not aging. They didn't just pull a rabbit out of a hat.
They're not aging?
They didn't pull a rabbit out of a hat, sign a couple of big-time free agents. You know, they look like they're built to last. Are they going to sign Chris Jones? What's to become of some of the guys on the offensive line? The problem is, when you have so many good players that you are a world champion, you're going to get to the point where somebody's going to be like, I got to get paid, and who's going to get paid?
But that's the thing. Like, I looked at their Spotrac page, where you kind of look at their breakdown 2020 and beyond. They've already given Tyreek Hill an extension, so their number one weapon is already locked up. Sammy Watkins may or may not even play next year, because he tweeted out that I might just sit out 2020 for poops and giggles. So whatever. I mean, you can replace, you know, find another fast guy in the draft. Their running backs are all very schemey. Like, you can just go.
Damian Williams is the guy,
right? But like, he's part of a system where you went from Kareem Hunt to Williams last year to Williams this year with LaShawn McCoy and Darrell Williams, and they all put up the same amount of production. Like, if you scout and you find the right running back that can fit your scheme, anybody can play there. I think they've got a lot of their offensive linemen are locked up.
Kelsey's locked up.
Two more years. Yeah, for two more years. So, yeah, you drop $200 million on Patrick Mahomes, and it sounds audacious, but he's looking like he's going to be, if healthy, the best quarterback in the league for many years to come. He dislocated his kneecap this year, missed like three games, and it kind of felt like he wanted to come back and play in that Thursday night game against Denver when he didn't have a limp walking off the field. So, you know, you lock up a couple guys on the offensive line. I think it, like, Mitchell Schwartz, people were saying, had one of the best postseasons that a tackle has ever had, allowing like two pressures on 100-plus passing dropbacks. Like, yeah, that's a team that's set up to succeed.
Mitchell Schwartz has, he signed for 2020. And I just, because, you know, that's a bookend guy. You don't just look at him. So he is signed through 2020 with a base salary. Total compensation would be about 10 mil. I also don't realize that he'll be 31 this coming season, then 32. So he's not an unrestricted free agent. So him for another 2 years. That, I think that's the way you really have to look at it in the NFL. Right, you got a title. How loaded could you be for the next 2 years? Because the league's just not built to say, all right, you got your line, your receivers, your pass rushers locked up for 4 or 5 years like you could do with baseball. It just doesn't work that way.
And like the rest of the AFC West is kind of like turning into a dumpster fire. Like the Raiders are, you know, moving to Vegas now, and they were fine last year, but they're apparently going all in on Tom Brady, like reportedly, and even if they don't get Brady, like Derek Carr is fine. The Broncos kind of don't know who their quarterback's going to be. Like Drew Lock was fine when he played for like 3 or 4 games to end the season. And the Chargers, while they've got plenty of weapons on offense, their defense was a letdown this year. They had to deal with the Melvin Gordon stuff off the field, and you don't have Phillip Rivers coming back, which means that you've got a rookie quarterback probably likely coming in, unless they like sign Marcus maybe and they try and get a veteran. But either way, you've got a new quarterback learning a new offense with, you know, an entirely new team moving into a big fancy building that's not even for them. This division is now just like they've got it by the throat and they can really just run away with it for forever.
I'm looking at the contract status now, and one of the guards, Ryder, is unrestricted, not until 2022. Eric Fisher, he is signed for the next 2 years with Schwartz. So been able to confirm that three of the five are signed. I mean, on the defensive side of the ball, you've got, I think they mentioned their secondary with Honey Badger and Bashaud Breeland are locked up as well. So, I mean, we just ticked off some pretty important boxes for that team. And like you said, more importantly, I think that is kind of the centerpiece is why you like Kansas City is because who in that division, like you just said, is really going to beat them next year? I mean, come on.
That's a team that, like, even if it's, you know, even if they have a letdown year and they only win 9-10 games, like, you're going to host a playoff game in an environment, in a stadium in January where it's very cold and it's very hard to play with, you know, you get back to the playoffs and you have fans that are hungry for another one with players that want to keep winning. Like, as long as Andy Reid is around and he keeps finding assistants that he can keep, you know, throwing onto his tree to say, these guys know my offenses, they know what they're doing, I can find the next guy and teach them what I've taught 19 other guys that went on to other jobs in the NFL. Like, this is a team that should, in theory, be able to keep getting back to AFC championship games. Like, is that a weird bar to set for them?
So once you break the schneid and finally win, kind of like the Red Sox, do you just start winning them? Back-to-back is still tough. It's still the NFL. It still took that ridiculous fourth quarter for them to win. But to think that they're not going to be in the mix and, you know, not make the divisional round with maybe a home field advantage game, that I don't buy, because I look around the AFC and first of all, are we 100% sure that New England doesn't regress a little bit more? I mean, let's face it, New England's biggest benefit is the Jets, Dolphins, and Bills. Kind of like with the Chiefs.
Right.
One of the reasons.
No, the parallels are very much there. Like, you're looking at basically the dream scenario is an AFC championship game with Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes at quarterback with two of the most fun offenses in football, with a Ravens defense that's underrated, underappreciated, and a Chiefs defense that just kind of has to, like, we have to make sure we don't give up 37 points because our team's going to score 39. We can do that. That's fine.
Yeah, I'm looking at Kansas City, Houston, Baltimore, I mean, they went 14-2 and bricked. That doesn't mean they're necessarily going anywhere with Cleveland and Cincinnati. And who the hell knows what's to make of the Steelers? I mean, obviously their quarterback situation is troublesome, to say the least. I mean, is there a guarantee at his age now that Roethlisberger comes back and is fill in the blank? I mean,
if he even wants to. Like, I don't know how bad that shoulder injury was and how much work he was able to actually put in, because I don't know if it was the beard, and Big Ben's also kind of have, like, the fat guy face thing going on for a while. He looked like he put on a lot of weight while not playing football.
Yeah, in 3.5 weeks, he turns 38. And you said, he's taken a beating. He's got his couple Super Bowls. I mean, in 2018, he did lead the league in passing yards, but he also led the league in attempts and interceptions. So it was a good year, but not a great year.
That was a Steelers team that had A.B. and Juju Smith-Schuster on offense trying to figure out how to replace Le'Veon Bell, and they were getting just enough from James Conner in the running game. Like, they had that.
They had to throw a lot.
Yeah, they were trying to throw a lot, even though they had the threat of being a balanced offense.
He was throwing for 320 yards a game. That's a lot. That's a historic number.
He was a pain in the ass to play against in fantasy, because you're looking at him and you're like, Big Ben's so old, he can't move, he doesn't do anything.
He's 347-3.
Yeah, he's named after a clock. He looks like a big clock, and then boom, he puts up 47 in a fantasy matchup, and you're like, this doesn't. I hate this guy. It doesn't make any sense.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. I hate this guy. Based on fantasy, you gotta love it. All right, now let's take let's take our final break. We'll come back. We'll have the tweet of the day and wrap up a Tuesday next. 95.3 The Score.
And now it's the Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day.
They are trending, twittering, tweeting, you name it.
On Sports Talk with Steve Tannen.
LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my God, WTF, why the face?
Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everybody.
Yo, Doc Nick.
Hi, host Steve. Nick Rogers here at the Coors Light Frostbrewed Sports Desk for the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment that is made to chill. I'm laughing because at Gritty NHL posted a video captioned Business as Usual, where it looks like he was at a school, like a Catholic school of some kind. He's playing basketball 2-on-1 against a pair of nuns or sisters or whoever in this school, and he absolutely swats one of them into next week. And then he does the thing where he takes his big belly and he like does like the belly pump in her face, and he's got the gritty face. It's the funniest video I've ever seen. And he did it to a nun, and it's so gritty. I said I'm jumping on the Flyers bandwagon because I want to see what Gritty would do during a Stanley Cup parade.
Nope.
I want it just for fun. I want to see what that would look like. Anyways, at Jeff Passan, he's very mad at what's going on in baseball. He's reporting news of players who are being signed to certain deals and what's happening around baseball, and you know, there's a lot of late action going on the market, and he just tweets out in a reply to one of his tweets, "I'll announce Mookie when it's done, you monster. Settle down." Just getting
monster.
So,
just good word.
Everybody tweeting him. So when's Mookie getting traded? Who's trading? What's going on? I can only imagine what his mentions must have been like. But to call his followers monsters is spectacular. Oh geez, what else do we have? Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Here's a good fun stat from at Her Hoop Stats, who tweeted, per Show Buzz Daily, 438,000 people watched Oregon women's basketball victory over UConn on ESPN2. That's nearly double the 240,000 that watched the NBA TV broadcast of Philly-Miami that was on at the same time. Hashtag plenty of interest. Kelly Graves actually retweeted that one, and then we retweeted it and kind of hopped on the bandwagon. But that's awesome that many people were watching that game on ESPN2 on a Monday night. And yeah, hashtag plenty of interest is very good.
But you know why? Because with Super Bowl in the rear view, football season is over and people are now focused on basketball.
XFL starts on Saturday. But our tweet of the day comes from at Arrowhead.
Ends on Sunday.
From at Arrowhead Pride, this which is a video from Travis Kelce's Instagram, who captioned a video, "Growing up playing hockey, I always wanted to chug out of the Stanley Cup. And after being crowned a champion, well, there's no cup on the Lombardi, so I decided to take a ride down the Lombardi Luge. Hashtag Lombardi Luge." He is on a team plane or some sort. I think it's a plane. And he's pouring a beer down the side of the Lombardi right into his mouth, and he's chugging the beer as it's going. I've never thought of being able to drink off of the Lombardi trophy. Travis Kelce found a way, and that's spectacular. So thanks to at T Kelce on Instagram and at Arrowhead Pride on Twitter for the refreshing tweet of the day. I hope he was using a Coors Light. I know I would. I'm at Rick Nodgers on Twitter. Steve is at Sports Talk 953. You can follow the station on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at 953 The Score. Don't be a jerk. Just do it.
And if you are a jerk, we're not going to help you. We're not bailing you out. You're on your jerk own. So what happened today? Mark D'Antonio is out as Michigan State coach. Some think he may be trying to get ahead of sanctions or some pretty bad accusations. The Knicks fired their president because he just wasn't getting it done in clutch time. He was terrible from three-point land. I guess the NBA, who's like this ever-evolving All-Star game, which is coming up in like less than 2 weeks, and they're changing the format to the three-point contest. They're adding deep shots. The interesting thing is the three-pointers in the contest aren't three-pointers. So they're going to be offering shots that are 6 feet beyond the three-point line. They should call it the Lillard line.
That seems like even 6 feet behind the line is still like 19 feet closer than Lillard's actual range. He's still thinking, this is like a layup. I don't get it.
I didn't realize the number. So the philosophy seems to be, why would I take a 22-footer with you in my grill when I could take an open 25-footer? But the number in the NBA this year, this is nuts. There have been almost 300 shots made from 30 feet or deeper this season, which has already surpassed the entire total for last year. And I'll tell you the truth, I didn't realize that Lillard's in it. So it's going to be Lillard, Buddy Hield, Devontae Graham of Charlotte, Duncan Robinson of the Heat, Trey Young, another pilot to bombardier, Joe Harris from actually should be pretty fun. That Robinson dude, Duncan Robinson, he's hitting 44%. That's the best three-point percentage of anybody who's in that. Lillard and Trey Young are all-stars. The defending champ is Joe Harris from the Nets. I don't even remember. I really don't watch it. It's been years since I even watched the dunk contest, much less the All-Star game or the three-point shooting contest. I didn't realize Lillard had been in it a couple times already. So you got that going for you, which is nice.
Tannenism.
Looking to our Wednesday program, I'm going to have to come up with some guests to supplement me and you and the Crunch Exchange and do a whole bunch of hoops. And it's going to be the eve of another big weekend here in the Pac-12. And where are we as far as pitchers and catchers reporting?
Very soon.
Than 2 weeks?
It could be within, like, this week.
Week?
Well, no, sorry, next week. I keep forgetting what day it actually is.
The 11th.
Is. Yeah,
so you get a week from today. That looks like the Mets on Monday, along with the irate Pirates, the Pods and the Dr. Dre's. So pitchers and catchers will be reporting from next Monday through next Friday. Position players come the next week, and all of a sudden you're going to be hearing the crack of the bat and the sounds and the green grass and the hope that spring's eternal when spring training starts in your various cactus and grapefruit leagues. I remember, this is very long time ago. I don't think I had been doing this show for more than 2 or 3 years, and I was at the other location, and I got somebody who was, you know, I'll tell you what, it goes back so long, I think somebody was starting like a spring training blog based out of Portland, and said, so, if I go down to Arizona, would you have me as a guest on your show? And I'm like, well, sure, why not? And so, we're talking and talking and talking, and somebody called and said, why are they calling it the Cactus League and the Grapefruit League? And I was like, well, the Cactus League is in Arizona, the desert. The Grapefruit League in Florida, where they grow grapefruits. Never heard that. Not really a big baseball fan. All right. And then over the next week, remember, this isn't the peak of the communication age. This is maybe 2001. Between people I ran into, people who call, people who would like email. Man, I've been following baseball for a bunch of years. I never knew that. And I was like, really? I guess you kind of hear something and you just, well, that's what it is. And it's like, really? Didn't get the whole desert and Florida thing. Such is life, the great adventure. One learns something new every day, or at least every other day. So thanks for hanging. Appreciate the time of Michelle Vopel, the ace journalist for ESPN, and Coach Graves talking Ducks, Ducks, UConn, and all that good stuff. Enjoy your evening. Thanks for listening to Crunch Time and Sports Talk right here on 95.3 The Score.
He goes!